Hi, everybody. I'm Scott.
Hello, I'm Julie.
And this is a Good Story is Hard to Find podcast,
where two Catholic friends talk about the books and movies they love and the traces of the one reality that lie below the surface.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and some ghosts this week. Or a ghost. No, some ghosts. One maybe ghost and a real ghost.
We're a little unsure about everything right now. And that kind of goes along with the story, which is The Canterville Ghost by Oscar Wilde.
Yes, indeed. I don't think I've read anything by Oscar Wilde. And I know that that probably shocks you.
Wait, what? No, I don't know how to process this. Wait.
Yeah, this story was a big surprise to me. So I didn't know what to expect. I know of Oscar Wilde. I know that he was sort of a satirist, right?
Seriously?
Seriously.
You've not seen The Importance of Being Earnest or...
No, not that I know of.
Oh, or, you know, what is it? The Picture of Dorian Gray, The Portrait of Dorian Gray.
Yeah, I haven't run across that one either. I'm sorry.
I haven't run across that one.
No, I have.
I thought I knew who you were, but who is this? Who's in here?
I have heard of those titles, both those titles, but I've never read either.
I'm... Wow. Okay.
So, right. Yeah. So this story is brand new for me.
Oh, well, that's kind of neat.
That's surprising. I thought it was pretty good.
Oh, good.
I thought it was, you know, it was funny. I thought it was great. Yeah. Because, yeah, it was funny and it turned everything on its head.
It sure did.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was surprising and funny.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry, mind's still blown by the not read anything by Oscar Wilde situation. Mm.
So now I have this complete short fiction of Oscar Wilde.
Well, now you've got plenty of chances, I guess.
And some titles that I've heard of but never read, you know, The Selfish Giant,
mm-hmm.
The Happy Prince. I mean, these mm-hmm. are things I've heard of, so.
Yep. Yeah, his fairy tales that mm-hmm. he wrote.
Cool. So you are a connoisseur of the Oscar Wilde?
Oh,
Wild?
No, not a connoisseur.
Okay.
However, I have read the Portrait of Dorian Gray, mm-hmm. and I talked about it on SFF Audio a while back.
Nice.
And I think maybe Heather Ord over at Craftlit did a special thing on that story that she gave me access to because she's so nice.
Oh, cool.
And so there was a lot of discussion there, but that is a very grim story. You know, the idea of the person who stays the same on the outside, but that allows them to be super decadent while their portrait reflects everything that's happening inside.
Mm-hmm.
And I assume you knew that much. Otherwise, sorry to spoil it.
No, I did know that much. Yeah.
Okay. Thank goodness. Yeah. So The Canterville Ghost, I like, of course, because it's funny. And he is really making fun of the British and the Americans. But then when you get to the end of it, it suddenly changes tone and gets serious. And it's a story of redemption.
Yeah. Mm.
And mercy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that surprised me too. Yeah.
Yeah. You don't expect that way out of the story. And it also kind of, to me, is a foreshadowing of his own life, because I think he had a deathbed conversion to the church.
Oh, did he really? Oh, I didn't know.
Yeah. He'd been baptized in the church. Then on his deathbed, he said, the priest who was there said he understood when he said that he was going to receive him into the Catholic Church and give him the last sacraments, and he was repeating everything as best he could after him. So it was the true deathbed conversion, entrance to the church and conversion.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he's one of those people, when you read about his life, of course he was outrageous, and he got away with a lot because he was such an outrageous celebrity. But at the same time, he always kind of had this sense that I feel in this story of, you know, underneath all that is this yearning for something more. Because he always kind of stood up for the church and that kind of thing when you read different quotes, assuming those were correct quotes.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, that's nice. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't know that. I always thought he was an atheist. and a satirist. This is what I knew. True. Yeah, before then. So interesting.
Well, it does say when he was in prison, he wrote to the Jesuits asking for a 6-month-long Catholic retreat.
Interesting.
And mm-hmm. he'd been in jail because of homosexuality.
Mm-hmm.
And really because he had been someone famous's, the son's, you know, boyfriend or whatever, and he pushed it publicly. And if he'd have backed down, then they would have dropped it, but he wouldn't back down because he's like, but I'm right. You know, one of those things.
Yeah.
So he wound up being in jail. So this is why he was being denied things like that. And when the request was denied, he told a journalist, I intend to be received into the Catholic Church before long.
Hmm.
So anyway.
Well, good. Yeah.
So, yeah, to get down to the story, basically, it's the story of some rich Americans who come to live in a castle that they've bought from an English nobleman who says, well, watch out, because with the house comes a ghost. And they're like, oh, we don't worry about ghosts. We don't believe in ghosts. It's fine. I'm like, well, there is a ghost. And they're like, well, okay, then we'd be interested. We'll take it along with the artwork.
Yeah.
And then at some points it makes me think of Mark Twain and the way he would write.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially about Americans. And so when they do encounter the ghost, it's then kind of shifts over to the ghost point of view at some point, and you start feeling sorry for the ghost.
Mm.
And it's all about his encounter with the family, what it does to the ghost. And then specifically about his encounter with the daughter of the family, which changes the perspective of the story from light to more serious and turns into a story of redemption. And it's really short.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, yeah. Yep.
It's really a novella more than a novel or anything.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had an audio version. I read it and I listened to the audio both. BJ Harrison, I really like him. He did it was an hour long, hour 10 minutes maybe.
Mm-hmm.
So just so you know the length, but yeah, he did a great job.
Yeah. He's so good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah. So that's the general thing.
Yeah.
And it's funny and, poignant, like you said, it's both.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'd love to dig into some details.
Since you hadn't discovered it before, you're probably going to have more new impressions of it than I do, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. So if we don't worry about spoilers anymore, you know, please go read it if you're interested. But now we're going to dig in.
Yeah.
So it was apparent right at the very beginning. It was like I was trying to decide, is he less enamored with the English or less enamored with the Americans? You know, it was like, what is he saying here? You know, he could be saying both and probably was both.
That's what I thought too.
Yeah. Yeah. I love, you know, the Americans, he's just like, I will take the furniture and the ghost at valuation. I come from a modern country where we have everything that money can buy. And with all our spry young fellows painting the old world red and carrying off your best actors and prima donnas, I reckon that if there were such a thing as a ghost in Europe, we'd have it at home in very short time. In one of our public museums. I mean, it was just awesome.
They're very obnoxious.
Just obnoxious. And this was written, I had that looked up. Let's see. Oh, here it is. 1887. So, and it says here in Wikipedia, by the way, that this is the first of his stories to be published.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So it was published in the Court and Society Review in February and March. They split it in half, 1887.
Yeah.
I mean, that was awesome. And then Lord Canterville, who's selling the place, you know, I fear that the ghost exists. Though it may have resisted the overtures of your enterprising impresarios, it has been well known for 3 centuries, you know, and he's telling you all that. And then there's these stories of, you know, English people encountering the ghost and and losing their minds, right? It's like,
yes,
this person is now a nervous wreck and has been for 20 years, you know, since they encountered a ghost and all this. And then the Americans are like, yeah, whatever.
Uh-huh. We're not worried about
some
ghosts. We're
not worried about it whatsoever. And then I loved the wife, Mrs. Otis, right? When she,
yes,
when they get into the house, there's a blood stain on the floor next to a fireplace or something. And she's like, oh, we need to clean that up. And then he springs in and he says, well, I've got the perfect thing to clean that up.
I've got the latest new invention.
Yeah, the latest new invention. Oh, and yeah, I've got to grab the name of that because it is a great name. There it is. Was it? Yeah, Pinkerton's Champion Stain Remover.
Yes.
Awesome. Yeah.
Because later on, when the ghost is going up and down the hall and rattling his chains and moaning, and they're like, "Oh, here's this oil that you should put on this chain. You're keeping us all awake."
Well, that's not just oil. That's Tammany Rising Sun Lubricator.
Oh yes. Gosh, yes. That's how you know it's good from that name.
That's right. That's right. And then that's their reaction to this ghost. It's just like, oh man, those chains are driving me crazy. Let's get those lubed.
Well,
and the ghost is, oh man, it's just so nice. You know, so all these English folk see the ghost and just fall apart. And then the Americans see the ghost and they're like, here, let's fix this.
Yeah. Well, we don't mind you being here. That's okay.
With our
inventions. You're keeping us awake.
Yeah. And then the family. Oops, sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, go ahead.
I was going to say the family includes Washington, which is the oldest boy. And then they have a daughter, Virginia, who's probably about 15. Mm. And then they've got twin boys that are young. And
they're little hellraisers. They're like, it's like turning Tom Sawyer loose.
Oh, my gosh. It reminded me of the Weasleys.
Right. Yes.
Yeah, I'm wondering maybe that was
from
inspired
Harry Potter
a little bit.
Stories. Yes.
Yeah.
You're right. And so all they do is plague the ghost within an inch of his life. They've got doors set up to dump cold water on him. And they're like, thank goodness he had his head behind because he was going headless that day for haunting. Like, he would have had a much worse cold than he did.
Oh, man.
Yeah, and they put, marbles in the hall so he'd trip on them. And
butter on the stairs.
Yeah, butter on the stairs so he'd fall down. Mm. And it's so funny because there is not a particle of reverence.
No,
for any
whatsoever.
Of the English traditions, customs, or beliefs.
Right.
They can fix that. Mm-hmm. And they've got something new to fix it with, and they're not going to ask anyone's advice or anything. And so this is the ultimate obnoxious American quality. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to say it's not true, but I still have it myself. So, it might be I respect tradition more than that. I am a Catholic. So that's tradition, right. Big part of that.
Yeah.
But it's that. And then, of course, you've got the British who in this time period, they were like the Americans said, like Mr. Oda said, they're busy marrying off people. And he says, we're taking away your actresses and prima donnas. But what was also happening is the heiresses were being married off because that way the Americans could get the titles and the property.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And so this is what he was making fun of the British with, because they have all their tradition, but they're still coming to agreements over money. It's money that's doing all of it.
Right. Yeah. And isn't that interesting? And I go back to the fact that, what is Oscar Wilde saying about English society when they're confronted with the ghost and they're having, 20 years of therapy, they're going off to the sanitariums or whatever he called them.
There's one guy whose wig was turned gray by it.
Yeah. Right.
I liked that.
Yeah. I like it a lot. And, yet the Americans are just completely unaffected.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like a fact, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, and the two who meet in the middle, of course, are the ghost and the daughter, Virginia.
Right. The daughter, Virginia, is different, right? So she's like, I don't know what you want to say, respectful, a little bit religious.
She's sweet and sensitive.
Yeah. And she's, Yeah. So she, yeah, I'm trying to find the right words here. She's kind of apart from the other ones. Mm-hmm. You know, the twins are Hellraisers, like you said, but she's, yeah, more sensitive to reality, I guess. And, and when she goes down to see the ghost, she actually starts to chew him out, you know, because, yeah, you know.
Says, we heard what you did to your wife. Yeah, you murdered her.
Exactly. Yeah.
And then he says, well, but they shouldn't have starved me. And she goes, mm-hmm. Oh, they did?
Mm-hmm.
You know, her brother starved me to death.
Yeah.
Suddenly, all mention of him being a murderer gets dropped. Because he also was a victim.
Yeah.
But the thing is that he also suffered. Yeah. He is at that point repentant and tired.
Oh, that line really affected me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I haven't slept for 300 years and I want to sleep so bad.
Right.
That was powerful.
Right.
And that's when it really turned serious, right?
Yeah. And, she is the only one who's sincere, really, and mm-hmm. genuine. Everybody else is either shallow or, like the ghost, has depths, but it has his own usual way of doing things has to be stripped away from him.
Mm.
You know, when he's when he's using the lubrication on his chains and he's tiptoeing in the halls. And moaning extremely softly because he has these things he has to fulfill at certain times of the month.
Yeah, I thought that was funny. Yeah.
As a ghost,
yeah.
He's got to do these things that's required, but he's doing it so quietly that the twins won't find out he's there.
Mm.
And so he's been broken and he's spending all his time, you know, gloomily looking out of windows or hiding away in his little cubbyhole, which it turns out is the place where he was starved to death, the dungeon, I guess.
Yeah.
And, but he's got to be brought that low before he can admit to Virginia what it is that he's longing for, which is death.
Yeah. 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 And that's heavy stuff.
Well, yeah, it's such a light story. And it's, of course, for this podcast's sake, it's how many times are we distracting ourselves so much that we won't stop and think about anything that really matters.
Yeah, and that's definitely, well, I haven't been outside the country before, so I don't really know what it's like elsewhere. But I do know that in America, that is a problem. You know, here we are in 2019 but hurrying around everywhere, just being generally busy and generally, doing to-do lists constantly. You know, if you don't stop and look around a while, that's difficult. You know, Cardinal Sarah, you know, in his book on silence, which I haven't finished yet, but, is very interesting to me. You know, talking about how we need silence in order to hear.
I remember a long time ago, I was talking to my spiritual director and saying that I would listen to the Pray As You Go stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And he just kind of got this quizzical look on his face and said, try doing it without listening to something.
Yeah.
Just have some silence. And that's when I stopped listening to podcasts on walks and that sort of thing, because I thought, oh, yeah, that's right. You just need to have your own thoughts bumping into each other sometimes for God to get in there.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I go through waves myself where I'm like, listen, and then stop.
Yeah.
You know.
Me too.
Yeah.
So, but the ghost is busy haunting. And he's so proud of all his triumphs, because when he's not able to do anything against his family is when he goes, well, then he was going to pull out all the stops and do this one. Put on this best outfit and did this thing and had his head under his arm or whatever and practiced the hollow laugh. And this is the one that, you know, so-and-so fainted and this guy, you know, went mad and whatever. And they just laugh at him.
Yeah.
And go, oh. You sound like you have a terrible cough. You need some of this remedy. sort of thing. Right. They won't take him seriously at all.
Yeah, not at all. And I don't know, the pinnacle of that for me is when they set up a fake ghost.
Oh, yes.
So he came out and was confronted with another ghost, and he scared the crap out of him.
He totally freaked out. Totally lost it.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Until he figured out that it was fake, and then he was upset, but yeah.
Yeah, because he went back to introduce himself. He's like, oh, well, we're ghosts together. We should mm-hmm. be in this together. And he's like, wait a minute. This is a sheet and a broom and a whatever it is, you know. He's like, oh.
Yeah, just too funny. Too funny. But yeah, but it really breaks him, like you said. And when it breaks him down, I mean, that gets really sad.
Yeah. Because she's yelling at him, but then she's sorry for him.
Mm-hmm.
And because she is a sensitive girl, she's about 15, she says she'll help him.
Yeah. Because yeah, and then, that was all really interesting. So we're looking at mercy here, right? So,
right.
You know, the ghost, we're laughing at the ghost, you know, quite a bit. But then we start to see suddenly this deep longing and this deep suffering. And the story changes. And then mm-hmm. what he asked Virginia to do is really a major thing. And she does it for him. So she sacrifices herself for him. I mean, in a way. I mean, she's not losing her life or anything. But she's putting herself in a really tough spot, you know, for his benefit. And
yeah.
And that was something. I'm looking for that passage. There it is. So he says, she says, I don't know what they mean. And he says, they mean, he said sadly, that you must weep with me for my sins because I have no tears, and pray for with me for my soul because I have no faith. And then if you have always been sweet and good and gentle, the angel of death will have mercy on me. You will see fearful shapes in the darkness, and wicked voices will whisper in your ear, but they will not harm you, for against the purity of a little child, the powers of hell cannot prevail. That's scary stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, yeah, could you do that for me? And she does.
Yeah, and then she's missing for a long time.
Yeah, and the whole family's suddenly, they're refocused, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've lost their daughter, and their reaction is you know, they're looking for her like mad, and extremely sad, upset, you know.
And this is what unites the British and the Americans.
Yeah,
everybody's helping them look.
That's an excellent
everybody
point.
Cares.
Yeah,
yeah. So yeah. It's something that's really serious. Everybody forgets all this other petty stuff, where they might be kind of sniping at each other a little, or just you know, having parties and things.
Wow.
And they get down to it.
That's cool. Yeah, that's great. You're absolutely right.
Because the other thing that happens is that the mercy that is shown and her self-sacrifice, even though it's frightening, breaks that cycle.
Mm-hmm.
So Sir Simon is released. He's allowed to die. And Virginia says, she comes away and she says she learns what love really is, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she also, of course, then gets a lot of jewels. So she's rewarded monetarily, though nobody seems to really care about that.
Yeah, yeah.
And she gets her own true love because it was saying the little, kept calling him the little Duke, but it's a British guy who's her romance interest.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, young love and all that. And they wind up getting married later, but he's the one who's most worried about her.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But she won't tell the secrets even.
She
for
won't
him.
Tell the secrets. Yeah. And that's pretty cool. I mean, I like that ending. So they're a little bit older, you know, married after the honeymoon and things.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's like, you know, hey, won't you tell me what happened there or what the secret is? It says, you've never told me what happened when you were locked up with a ghost. And she says, I've never told anyone, Cecil. But I know that, but you might tell me. Please don't ask Cecil. I cannot tell you. Poor Sir Simon. I owe him a great deal. And that's an interesting line. Yes, don't laugh, Cecil. I really do. He made me see what life is. and what death signifies, and why love is stronger than both. And that is fantastic. And yeah. then the Duke says, well, you can have your secret as long as I have your heart. And she says, you'll always have that, Cecil. And then he says, and you will tell our children someday, won't you? And I think that's a cool line. It says Virginia blushed was the last line. But
yeah,
but
yeah,
I love it. You know, so there's one aspect of it. But, you know, I was thinking, I think, yeah, she's going to tell her kids.
I know you can't tell if it's that or if it's that she's like, oh, you're talking about sex.
Yeah, exactly.
We just had our honeymoon kind of thing.
Right.
Yeah. But yeah.
But that's what I took away. Yeah. She's going to tell her kids.
Yeah.
And the Canterville Ghost Part 2, which is not as good as one, is born.
As always. It's always the case.
Yeah. which is a funny thing. When I looked this up, there's like 150 movies.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Everybody's done this. Alec Guinness, all these different people.
It says 1944 with Charles Laughton.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man.
And then, looking on Wikipedia. This may not even be all of them, but it's like The Canterville Ghost, a 1985 film. The Canterville Ghost, a 1986 film. The Canterville Ghost, a 1988 animated television special.
I don't think I knew about all those relatively modern ones. Right. You know?
Yeah. The Canterville Ghost, a 1996 film starring Patrick Stewart.
Huh.
Yeah. No idea. Yeah. How did I, you know, yeah. So it's weird to me that... I don't know why I haven't come across it, but it's cool how he, Oscar Wilde, he sets this thing up exactly like the traditional ghost stories, right? The place, the setting that it takes place in is perfect. It's like a movie set. You know, we're going to do a ghost story in England in the 1800s, and this is the perfect house.
Yeah, it's the classic Gothic setting.
Right.
The big castle, the long history, the hauntings. Mm. And then he throws Mark Twain-style Americans in there.
Yeah, yeah.
And they won't listen to any of it, and their irreverence... and they
will not cooperate.
Yeah, well, and it's interesting to me that it breaks the ghost's spirit and kind of rends his power away from him. Because then it comes down to a personality clash.
Mm-hmm.
And most ghost stories, the ghosts have whatever power they have. It doesn't depend on outside forces.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. And they can affect you even if you don't believe in them.
Mm.
And in this, it's dependent on belief. It seems like.
Yeah.
You know, they keep washing away the blood stain. He keeps having to reapply it. And eventually he's like, there's only so much blood. It's hard to get, you know. So he's having to take the paints out of Virginia's paint set. So it's showing up as, you know, green. And so like I was having to do all my sunsets in green. Look really awful. Man. Pretty soon you've taken all the colors. Then I was having to just do nighttime scenes with white. Do you know how hard that is? Those are the most difficult to paint.
That is crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. It was just funny.
It is funny. Yeah. Yeah. He has to maintain that. So that's one of his duties. He's got to maintain that blood stain.
Yeah. And you never know who the higher powers are or anything, but you assume it's whatever mystical connection that had the poem that told how he could be freed put in the window.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The stained glass window, I guess it was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But too good.
Yeah. Well, and it's not that there's tons more in that. I mean, although that's a lot to pack into one short story.
Yeah.
But, I think, of course, I liked the funny part. The part when you're on the ghost side.
Oh, it was so funny. You know,
I can't handle this.
It took me so by surprise. And, you know, all of a sudden we're in the ghost lair and everything. And he's got all these costumes and things that he puts in. And then when he first escapes from those twins, Wilde says something like, he escaped using the fourth dimension or something like that. So you're thinking, wow, you know, so he's going through walls and everything. And, but yet he's still got these chains that can be oiled and he can trip on butter, you know, or slip on butter and he can, you know, all these other things. It was just awesome.
Yeah, because he's also, in many ways, he's like an actor because he's changing costumes. Yeah. He's
I'm going to be the headless whatever.
Yeah, you know? He's planning things out, these different roles. And so it's not like he's even using, as we would say these days, ectoplasm or anything to manifest it.
Yeah.
Although it has to be, I guess, if he was disappearing, but it's like he goes back behind the scenes to his dressing room in a sense.
Yep. And that he snuck into that guy's room to take that lubricant.
Yeah.
You know, and how ashamed he was, you know, but he just wanted to be quiet so the twins wouldn't hear him anymore.
Yeah.
It's just full of just great stuff. It's just good.
Yeah. And Wild was so good at all that. He would really... He'd just take things you didn't expect, and like you said, he'd turn them on their heads.
Mm-hmm.
But he also just was funny, you know, had that turn of phrase.
Right.
And just that sense of perspective.
A funny
and I
guy.
Guess that's what this whole story plays with your sense of perspective.
Mm-hmm.
How do you look at the world? You know, are you so practical that you don't give the supernatural or anything you can't see improve and get the stains out of as inconsequential?
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter. Are you like the British where you'll just accept it and never question it?
Uh-huh.
You know, and we see these attitudes around us all the time. And it doesn't mean that we're not prey to them, but it's that sense that as a Catholic, you have to do, as they say, both and.
Right, right.
Not either or.
Mm-hmm.
We're supposed to be kind of in the middle, more like Virginia.
Yeah.
Who's the bond between both. Well, it's funny. She's the bond between the British and the Americans, right? She marries the British, but she's the bond between the supernatural world and the real world because she helps free the ghost.
Right. Well, yeah, absolutely right.
Yeah. Yeah. So she's more emblematic of what we should all be like anyway.
Yeah. Agreed. And what do you think he was specifically saying about the British with all of the fainting and major anxiety after the ghost encounter? Is it just, you know, being dramatic, or is there something deeper there?
I just think it was that over. The unthinking tradition.
Ah, okay.
That they would never question it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they believed it. So they were really affected by it.
Gotcha.
And Americans, of course, were brash and modern.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really this culture clash. And, you know, the funny thing is the common elements is both of them are shallow because both just accept at the surface what they think things should be like.
Mm-hmm.
And both of them act superior to the other one.
Right, right.
Yeah. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, you may find the ghost. Is there blah, 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 blah? And he's like, oh, yeah, well, we'll worry, you know, if there were European ghosts, I think we'd have some back home if they mattered.
Yeah.
You know, so they're both kind of throwing that at each other.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think it was just the juxtaposition of the extremes of the culture clash.
Yeah. I know he would definitely do an extremes. Mm-hmm. But it was like, you know, I can clearly see the fault of the Americans, you know, and so it's like, you know, so the Americans are viewing the universe as just this thing that we manipulate, you know, to do what we want. Right.
Right.
And then the British are looking at the universe as a more of a mystical thing or something that can't be controlled.
Everybody knows what ghosts are.
Or just
they're
maybe
scary.
They're passive, you know, we can't do anything about anything kind of a thing.
Well, they're also kind of proud of it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
They're, oh, our ghost, though.
True, very true.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like this.
Mm-hmm.
And you may discover when you come up, you know, so I just think it's that tradition versus, you know, custom.
Yeah.
This is better than what you're doing.
Right.
I just think it's that.
Yeah, okay.
Yep. That's to me.
No,
maybe
I'm
being too shallow and superior about
it. That's totally
it.
Acceptable. Yeah, it was just something that I've been mulling over ever since, you know, I was like, yeah, this is just, you know, what is he saying exactly? You know, it's like, I can't remember who quoted that, but there's a quote that says, once tradition is recognized as tradition, it's doomed. You know, somebody's going to want to tear it down, you know, because, we do this because of no reason other than this is the way we've been doing it. Therefore, let's tear it up. You know, somebody always has this progressive, you know, progress quote and in quotes. I need to do the air quotes when I say that. Well, when I say progress.
Yes. Yeah, because what you're saying about tradition makes me think of that famous G.K. Chesterton quote, which I'm going to mangle, which is that tradition is democracy, allowing democracy to our ancestors.
Mm.
Gives them a vote in what's happening too, and says that what they thought mattered.
Yeah, yeah.
Not that you're just going to, like you say, progress past that, and nothing they said has any credence, and they were idiots, essentially. Right.
Well, yeah, you know, and that's the whole idea of reading older books as well. You know, not reading just modern things, because you're basically I think it was C.S. Lewis who said that one, right? It's like when you read older stuff, you're reading books that were written in a society that had different emphases, or it was a time in which the specific problems were slightly different. Mm-hmm. And they're talking about things from their perspective, which is just as valid as ours.
Yes, and it's the offering the validity,
mm-hmm.
or the possibility of validity to this traditional stuff that is so easy to throw out. And it's funny because you see that in the American side of the story, and you see in the British the stuff that the Americans don't like. It's that hidebound, we're not going to do anything new, look how easy it is to get rid of this blood stain. And the housekeeper's there kind of as a stand-in for all the British. She's fainting, the crack of thunder across the sky that the ghost makes happen, she faints, and they're all like, oh, she's weak. Well, keeper, it's part of the agreement.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Yeah.
And they're just like, oh, big storm coming. That's odd. You know, didn't see it earlier.
Yeah.
And I think that's the problem that we're having right now in America anyway, right? Is there's all this chaos all around us because people's ideas of what tradition means and how we honor it versus what progress means and how we improve things. Because there's positive sides to both things.
There are positive, and that's clashing what we're missing right heavily there.
Because everybody's being like the people in this story. We're seeing the most extreme examples, and nobody will listen to the other person. So where's that bridge between them?
Where's Virginia?
Yeah, where's Virginia? And what we all want, I think, from both sides would like a Virginia.
Yeah.
Who represents their side properly.
Right.
And, you know.
Yeah. No, I totally agree with you. It's like, you know, there's a lot of, you know, well, this side is against this thing that's important to me. And they're also against this other thing. So I must be against that.
Right.
As well. There's no, you know, nuance. There's just reaction.
Yeah, it's just a shallow take on it.
Right. Yeah. We need to take sides on all that stuff. So.
Yeah.
Tough.
And and if what it does is make you think some, but it often doesn't, because we're all getting so mad because things are getting more and more extreme. And what we should be trying to do, I guess, is what do we need to cast off so we can look at both sides evenly?
Mm. Right.
But
yeah, if we could just look at everything rationally, you know, and with some compassion.
Yeah, well, that would be,
you know,
that would be the nice thing, really.
We could all move forward and everything would be good.
Well, yeah, if we could accept that the other side has a goal that is worth wanting to achieve, to be kind to these people, to do this for those people. It's just the methods, but everybody gets so entrenched in what the methods are that no one will meet in the middle to compromise over it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And because both sides have to do that for the other one.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody wants to achieve something, and it's not because they're starting off to be mean and annoying to people. They don't understand why the people can't see their point of view, because they've forgotten that the basic thing underneath is probably a good one.
Right.
The real basic desire.
Yeah. Just trusting that the other person has good motives.
Yeah.
Right. Even if you think that they're wrong, you know, you can try and convince them of that, but
yeah,
but just that, you know, the motive's right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
However, here we are.
However, here we are. Yeah. That's going to be the name of our next podcast, our spinoff is However, Here We Are.
Here we are. And I mean, and you have to feel like that's what was being made fun of in this story.
Yeah,
you know, the real extreme points of view, everybody getting all upset about things, people not understanding each other. And he's just like, this is hilarious.
Mm.
Let's do it. Like, let's look at it like this. This is great for a story.
Yeah, that's cool. And again, you know, I haven't been outside the United States, so it's interesting to, I mean, this is from the, 1890, I think we said, 1897 or something.
Mm-hmm.
Or, but anyway, 1800s, 1887. So,
yeah, late 1800s.
Right. But that there is this American character, you know, and you called it, you know, Mark Twain-ish, you know, so that's really, you know, what I understand too. But it's really interesting that we had this character as viewed by Europe. That whole concept is really interesting. It's like those Americans, and I know that was always it, all the way up to World War II. You know, there was this view of America as, you know, having this specific character. And I know we didn't even want to get into that at the point, but it's interesting to think about, you know, how different we are from Europe. But yet we're so similar in other ways.
Yeah, because there's that common heritage that goes way back. But on the other hand, it surely has to come from how our country was formed by so many people deliberately coming here to get away from stuff they didn't like somewhere else. Or this was your opportunity to get something you couldn't get at home. You know, you weren't landed gentry. You were very poor, but you could get land here, whatever. Mm. And so you had to be... These were the descendants of that real independent way of thinking and that idea of striking out. And if you had to do things on your own, a new way, that's what it takes to achieve a goal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to be able to feed your family, to be able to worship the way you want. You know, there's all kinds of reasons that people came, but you feel like a big part of the character of our country comes from that real independent pioneer spirit, I think I would call it.
Yeah, yeah.
And it just has seeped in so many ways. And interestingly, I think the more secular we all become, the closer we come to falling back into, or the Europeans come up to being more like us. I mean, I think we all kind of start to, I don't know, we're brangling in the same way.
Hmm.
Maybe that was always the case.
Yeah, maybe so.
Might take people from overseas to tell us that. But I think what I've read, and some of this goes back to reading part of Paul Johnson's History of the American People. There are these American qualities that he would show showing up really early. So he'd be talking about something and he'd go, yeah, so see, as early as 1672, this quality was shown in this township that became a mark of American spirit. And I went, oh my gosh, I see what he's saying.
Mm-hmm.
And
you
know, so I don't know if as the world becomes smaller, it becomes more homogenous in some ways like that.
Yeah. And I wonder, you know, if that's, you know, with Brexit and other things like that, I think that might be what people are worried about losing, you know, these traditions and no borders and things like that, making us one world, you know. But we all have this specific character. You know, America has a character, England has a character, Italy has a character. And some of the worry about losing that cultural difference.
And it's so funny because someone much younger was talking to me about, you know, oh, and Brexit, you know, and I was like, oh, I always expected something like that. And they went, what?
Hmm.
And I said, I never thought the European Union was really a great idea because all those countries are so different. It's not like the American states where they themselves were different enough, but they had that national character kind of at that point, way back. I said, these people had all been formed by centuries of different cultures and languages and everything. And now you're trying to mash them together. So I'm not surprised people want to leave and go, no, we don't care for all these laws by this court, or we don't, yeah, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And the British, we're more like the British than anyone, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah. Interesting.
And, you know, Boris Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
Donald Trump. I don't know. Same cloth. I don't know.
They look very similar.
They do look similar. It's like, who copied who's hair? This is a bad idea for both of you.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. Interesting stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've been talking about The Sixth Sense with a lot of people lately, and my book club and different movie groups I've talked to. And you and I talked about it a really long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
And you're the one who I thank you so much for making me watch that movie.
Oh, cool.
You know, I wouldn't have.
I recently rewatched it too.
Oh, it's, yeah. Oh gosh, it's so good. But the interesting thing that I'm thinking about it during our conversation, because you're talking about the British and their customs,
mm-hmm,
and how they just accept it. And then there's the Americans who don't even understand essentially what the British are talking about.
Hmm.
It doesn't occur to them to be afraid, right?
Right.
And so this
right.
is like The Sixth Sense, where everybody knows how you're supposed to act. Ghosts are terrifying. Or they're dumb. Nobody believes in them except the little boy, because he can see them. And he doesn't tell anyone because he knows what they think. So he's properly terrified until the doctor finally believes him. And he says, what do you think these ghosts want?
Hmm.
And he says, maybe they want help. And the doctor says, that's what I think. And the little boy says, so what should you do? And he says, listen. Well, when we see the little boy, he's saying, is there something you want to tell me? And what they want, it turns out, is help. But so what this does is everybody's got the two ways they're reacting to ghosts. And by changing the perspective, it humanizes the ghosts in that sense. It humanizes the horror.
Wow, so, that's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. So they're not malevolent and horrible and trying to hurt you. Mm-hmm. They are lost souls who need help. And that's exactly what this story does. The Canterville Ghost does.
That's interesting. So you have the two extremes. So you have the English who have been trained or taught, you know, that ghosts are scary.
And they are scary.
And they are scary, right.
He is scary.
And then Americans who don't even understand that at all, because they haven't been raised up in that tradition.
Yeah.
So they're like, ghost, hey, that sounds really cool.
Right.
Right.
And so, and now that we're talking about it, I'm thinking, isn't this like all the younger people, especially, who've not been taught any religion?
Hmm.
And they don't even understand what you mean when you talk about faith.
Yeah, that's a good point. How interesting. So, yeah, I remember, I'm not going to remember his name. But he was doing some work on trying to understand political divides and things. But he did demonstrate that religious folks can understand irreligious folks, but irreligious folks can't understand or have a lot of difficulty understanding religious folks.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, I'll send you that or put a link out.
Yeah, put a link on the post.
I will, yeah.
Yeah.
But very interesting. Yeah. Well, that's cool.
Yeah.
That's great.
Just an extra thought. I wouldn't have expected to connect those two things.
Yeah.
But that really is, it's that shift in perspective. And the British and the Americans just have diametrically opposite senses of perspective. And neither one is necessarily wrong, as we see. The lack of reverence or, you know, readiness to be afraid means they treat the ghosts completely differently. And the British, it's not that they're necessarily giving themselves over to it, but this because the ghost is really scary. But you have to be ready for the ghost to be scary. I mean, you know.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
You have to accept it or he loses his power.
Absolutely.
So.
Wow. Nifty.
Interesting, like anyway.
It. Yeah. Well, do we have anything else to say about the Canterville Ghost?
I think that's all I had to say.
I sure did enjoy it.
I'm so glad.
Yeah. a nice, yeah, light, funny yes, Halloween story, but with a good, meaningful punch at the end.
Yeah, a yep, bit of a moral in there.
Yeah, yeah.
The way the Victorians liked.
For sure.
Yeah.
Great. Well, thank you.
Well, I'm glad. Thank well, you're you, welcome. You. I'm yep, so glad. I thought this would be, you know, something you'd read a lot of times. So
no.
I'm glad you got to be introduced to it.
Thank you much.
I'm no, you're welcome.
Happy to have been.
Yeah.
That's great. All right. Well, next up is a movie. Just Book of Eli.
Woohoo!
Yeah. Starring Denzel Washington.
Yeah. And wow. Yeah. It's an interesting apocalyptic story.
Yeah. Yep. For sure. Mm-hmm. It'll mm-hmm, be fun. Fun to talk
I
about.
Love it.
All right.
Yeah,
cool.
It will be. Okay. Great.
Well, thanks for listening, everybody.
Yep. We'll talk to you again soon.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you.